till the rain come tumbling down.
That was The Garden Song by Peter, Paul, and Mary, and I'd like to welcome you to the Lopez Gardener Spot, a half-hour organic gardening show that airs live on the first Wednesday of each month, and then is broadcast as a repeat each subsequent Wednesday in the same month. I'm Ann Karp, and my co-host for the show is Jeannie Flynn, but she's not here yet, so we're going to go ahead and start the show, and hopefully she'll show up here in a few minutes. Each month on the show, we have a topic for discussion that relates to what we're doing in our gardens and a guest gardener or farmer. This month, our guest is Anna Molinoff from Greenheart Gardens. Welcome, Anna.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
In just a bit, we'll be talking with Anna about seeds, what plants we're able to harvest seeds from, and the best way seeds can be stored for the next growing season. Before we continue on with our show, we'd like to say you are listening to KLOI LPFM 102.9 Community Radio from beautiful Lopez Island. All views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the host and or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of KLOI or GIVE. Around a corner after the hour, we'll open up the phone lines at 468-3656 for comments or questions from listeners. I'm going to start off today with a calendar section for what's happening locally in September. So on September 10th will be the last Lopez Island Farmers Market for 2011. The market will be open from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in Lopez Village next to the Lopez Center for Community and the Arts. For more information, visit lopezfarmersmarket.com. The Orcas Island Farmers Market is open from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. every Saturday through the last weekend of September on the Village Green in the heart of East Sound. All items sold in the market are grown or crafted by Orcas Island farmers and artisans. The San Juan Island Farmers Market is moving to the Brickworks Plaza at the corner of Nichols Street and Sunshine Alley. They'll be there every Saturday starting September 10th through October 29th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Thursday, September 22nd, at Woodman Hall from 10 o'clock to 11:30, the Lopez Island Gardeners Club will meet and feature guest speaker Richie Steffen. Richie is the curator for the Elizabeth C. Miller Botanical Garden, where he manages the rare plant collections and heads acquisitions of new plants for the garden. The topic for his talk is reliable plants for sun and shade. Learn about an array of beautiful and drought-tolerant plants that thrive in our Northwest gardens. Richie will show great plants and plant combinations for both sunny locations and that difficult dry shade bed. Colorful and artfully composed images will leave you with many ideas to try at home. If you aren't able to catch the talk on Lopez Island, Richie will be speaking on Wednesday, September 21st at 10 o'clock at the Madrona Room at the Orca Center. Off island at Christensen's Greenhouse and Nursery on Best Road in Mount Vernon, there are a number of Saturday workshops, all for 1 hour, starting at 11 o'clock. On September 10th, is Using Grasses in the Garden. On September 17th, there is a workshop called Heavenly Hydrangeas, and on September 24th, the workshop is Revitalize Your Garden Design. I want to put in a little plug here for two great resources that you can check out online. The first is Grow Northwest Magazine at www.grownorthwest.com. It's a wonderful resource of articles related to gardening on a bi-monthly basis. It also has a local calendar of gardening events for Whatcom, Skagit, and San Juan counties. The Lopez Library usually has printed copies of the magazine around the second week of the month and that the magazine comes out in, so that should be later on this week. The second resource is a wonderful new online gardening blog by Debbie Hatch called Lopez Island Kitchen Gardens. She's compiled the articles that she's written for the Islands Weekly and added a number of several additional posts on new topics such as growing leeks, fava beans, greens for fall and winter beets. Greens for fall and winter, beets red and yellow, zucchini, costata romanesca, and her latest blog is on tomatoes. The posts have planting and plant care tips and also great recipes. I think if you check it out, you'll enjoy it as much as I have. So now we have some time to talk with Anna about seeds and seed saving. So Anna, you've been a longtime resident of Lopez Island.
Yeah, me and my family have lived here since 94. Mm-hmm. We moved here from Seattle. Uh-huh. I love it here.
And you do gardening at your parents' farm?
My parents are generous enough to give me free rein of their lower field, and I grow seeds there for vegetables and flowers and herbs.
And your company that you're saving your seeds with is called?
It's called Greenheart Gardens.
Greenheart Gardens.
Yeah.
And what attracts you to seed savings?
I find it immensely satisfying to not just eat my peas and beans, but have a beautiful jar of dry seeds at the end of the year that I know will feed myself and my family and my community for many years to come. And,
So do you recommend, do you have any recommendations of any information where people can go and actually buy a book about seed saving or pamphlets that come out?
Yeah, my very favorite book is called Breed Your Own Vegetable Varieties by Carol Deppe. It's like a seed saving Bible. It's got these wonderful tables in the middle of the book that are hard to understand, but if you take the time to learn how to read them, they have information on how to save seeds from every variety of vegetable and herb you could mm-hmm. think up.
Mm-hmm. Do they do ornamentals too?
I think she has a few ornamentals, but I think she mostly focuses on food and medicine
mm-hmm.
plants.
Mm-hmm. And do they carry that book locally?
I believe it's at Phyllis's bookstore. Mm-hmm. So I think so.
Oh, great. Why do you save seeds? I know you talked about you want to use them for your garden, and you love to have them at the end of the year, but are there other reasons more culturally or political reasons that you would save seeds?
You know, my reasons aren't super political, but I think it's great to save seeds and grow crops for the purpose of saving seeds because when you grow plants generation after generation in a certain area, they naturally adapt to their environment. And so after year, you're going to get better and better results mm-hmm. from the plants that you grow. And you're going to learn what grows best in your climate. And you get better results.
And are the seeds adapting also, or are the plants adapting to the local environment in terms of resistance to pests and...
Yes, and that just naturally happens because when you grow a group of 100 or 200 plants and the pests eat, you know, a certain amount of them, the ones that are resistant to the pests are the ones that are going to survive for you to collect the seeds of.
Mm-hmm. And that brings up another question is, like, how do you decide which plant you're going to harvest your food from and which you're going to leave in the ground then?
Well, I'll use lettuce as an example. When I plant my lettuce, I plant, you know, a 4-foot by 10-foot raised bed, and I plant it pretty dense. And as my lettuce starts to come up, what I will do is I will thin out the smaller plants and eat them, or I'll thin out the plants that look a little different from the other ones, and I'll eat those, and I'll leave the biggest, healthiest plants in the ground to go to seed.
And so in that one bed, that 4x8 bed, you plant just one variety of lettuce?
Yes.
Okay. So, and you're doing seed saving maybe more on a small scale than, would you consider it like a kitchen garden seed saving?
It's bigger than a kitchen garden. I cultivate a little under a quarter acre. So it's much bigger than a kitchen garden would need to be, but mm-hmm. It's small enough that I can do it all by hand, and so it does definitely mimic the conditions of a kitchen garden. which is great because that means that the seeds that I am growing and selling to members of the community are going to fit more with mm-hmm. with what people are mm-hmm. doing.
Would you do a number of different varieties of lettuce then in different beds?
I would. Lettuce is wonderful because it doesn't cross with other lettuces, so you can mm-hmm. grow lots of different varieties in one season. Mm-hmm. And
What are some plants that would cross-pollinate that you'd have to be careful about having in your garden together?
Well, you want to be careful of anything in the brassica family they're big crossers or outbreeders is the technical term. and what that means is that the plants will definitely cross-pollinate with members of their same species, and that's why it's so valuable to know the plants that you're growing. It's helpful to know the genus and the species of the plants because generally speaking, even members of the same genus or family will not cross with different species in that same genus or family.
Mm-hmm. So what would happen? Like, I made a big mistake this year. I bought all heirloom seeds mm-hmm. to do my planting, and I did my starts with those, and then I put my broccoli and my cauliflower and cabbage in one bed together mm-hmm. and I did that pretty much because I'm not going to need a full bed of broccoli or a full right. bed of cabbage or so then I was doing my reading and I found out that these are going to cross-pollinate. So are those seeds really now not valid at all? Are viable at all? Or I'm going to get something really different next year if I plant them?
If they were all flowering at the same time, mm-hmm. then they most definitely crossed with each other. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what you are going to get. I wouldn't say that it's not worthwhile or interesting to plant those seeds because mm-hmm. then you'll definitely have a really great learning experience, and mm-hmm. you might actually come up with a really great food from it. You just don't know.
Call a broccoli.
Yeah, exactly. So that can, while it's not ideal if you're looking to get this, get the seed from the same thing that you grew, it can still be really fun.
Mm-hmm. And a couple of years ago, I had a wonderful batch of spinach that I got from the co-op in either Skagit or Bellingham. I got the starts there, and beautiful, great big leafed spinach called giant something spinach, and I thought, oh, I'm going to collect the seeds from this, and so I waited and waited and waited and waited and waited, and finally pulled out the plants, not really realizing where the seeds were, mm-hmm. And then figured out that they're, these tiny little, I could see them after I got the plants out, and then I dried them and planted them, but I didn't, and they may have been a hybrid, a variety. So could you talk a little bit about, what happens when you have a hybrid? Will you get that plant again?
Well, what a hybrid is, it's two parent varieties that have crossed one year, and then it's that subsequent generation, and mm-hmm. what happens a lot of times is that subsequent generation, that hybrid, which is an F1 hybrid, mm-hmm. They'll all be uniform, they'll have increased vigor, there will be all these advantages, and that's, that's why people create hybrid seeds. Mm-hmm. Now what happens the next generation, if you save those hybrid seeds, often you will get a whole hodgepodge of who knows
yeah.
what, because mm-hmm. those, that's that next, that second year, that F2 generation is when all those differences start to express themselves. So you most likely are not going to get the same thing, although sometimes you'll get a hybrid that is labeled a hybrid and actually isn't a hybrid and mm-hmm. will be breed true. So it's worth planting them. You'll mm-hmm. get spinach.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely didn't get the same spinach that I thought I was going to be getting.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
And then spinach has a male and a female plant too, right?
Right.
And this was confusing me because mm-hmm. some of the plants had these little brown things, but not all of it didn't. I wasn't really sure. Then I
right.
figured out, oh yeah, my gosh, those are the seeds that yeah. I need to be drying.
Yeah.
And that also brings up another question. So how do you time when you pull the plants for seeds? Do you wait till they completely die and harvest them then, or you pick them?
Usually you want to wait. If you can, you want to wait until the seed has sucked up everything it can suck up from the bottom part of the plant. it's kind of like how you want to leave your winter squashes in the field until the vines die back, because mm-hmm. at that point mm-hmm. the squash has sucked up all the energy it can from the vine. And that's really true for most things. When I harvest my peas, I let them dry completely on their trellis before I bring them in. Mm-hmm. You want to look for the point when the plant looks like it's naturally ready to drop its seeds. Mm-hmm. And that's when you want to harvest the seeds.
Mm-hmm. This year I pulled up my peas. I did Cascade sugar peas. Mm-hmm. And I pulled them out a little bit early. I mean, it's definitely at the end of the season, but the plants, there were still plants, but there weren't any more flowers on them. Mm-hmm. So I could get carrots planted mm-hmm. in there for fall. Mm-hmm. And so I've just laid them out on racks to dry, picked off the mm-hmm. Pods, and a lot of them are real big, but some of them, you know, are kind of not that small. Would you think that'll be okay next year?
You know, it depends. If you're going to pull something early, I recommend pulling up the whole plant, root included, and letting the whole plant dry up, and that way the pods can continue to suck up some of that energy from the rest of the plant.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a great suggestion. Could you talk a little bit about open pollinated? How's that different from an heirloom or a hybrid plant?
Well, heirloom varieties are open pollinated by nature. Hybrids, I talked a little bit about, are two parent varieties cross to get a uniform and vigorous variety. Heirlooms are great for saving seeds from. They're just as great as open pollinated newer varieties. And there's lots of newer varieties that aren't heirlooms, but that are just absolutely wonderful. Mm-hmm. So heirlooms are wonderful, but newer varieties are great too. It's just good to try everything.
And you need to, but if you want to collect the seeds, you want to make sure it's not a hybrid if it's a new variety.
Right.
Okay. And a lot, so like Territorial Seeds catalog will say on their catalog open pollinated with that.
Would you
be safe with that?
They'll say F1 hybrid if they're a hybrid, mm-hmm. and sometimes they'll say open pollinated and sometimes they won't. But in general, it'll always, seed catalogs or seed packets will always tell you when something is a hybrid.
Okay. And do you do any hybrid seeds then?
No. I stick with open pollinated. It's much easier. Let them do their thing by themselves.
Could you tell me a little bit about the seeds that you do have? I know you have them for sale here on the island. Mm-hmm. It blossoms.
Well, I have, I'm growing a variety of winter squash that I've grown before, and I'm really excited about getting another lot of seeds out on this one. It's called Oregon Homestead Line. It's a sweet meat type squash. The fruits will often, you know, get up to 16 to 18 pounds. Mm-hmm. They're mm-hmm. large. They're very sweet, delicious, great for pumpkin pies. Mm-hmm. They often will keep into the spring, so that's a really exciting one, and I'll have that one for sale next year. So, and I also have a really great zucchini called Costata Romanesca.
Uh-huh.
I think you mentioned that one.
Yeah, Debbie Hatch loves
but
that.
That's just a beautiful zucchini. They are delicious even as they get a little bigger, and they're wonderful, and I'll have those next year too. And of course I always grow lots of varieties of peas, because this is such a wonderful climate for pea growing, and I have some really great varieties that I'm excited about. I have a Green Beauty Snow Pea again, after a year hiatus of that one, and that's a beautiful purple flowered snow pea. The pods get up to about 6 inches long sometimes, and they're just super sweet and a little starchy and delicious. Mm-hmm. That's very good.
How do you know which plants are self-pollinating and which aren't? So you need to have more than one of those plants in it.
Right.
I mean, you do a bed, but say for the, you know, a normal gardener that might get starts from and then want to collect those seeds.
Well, I'll talk about the brassica family. Everything in the brassica family, as far as I know, needs at least 100 plants of the same variety to successfully produce seeds. And that doesn't mean that you can't save seed off of one kale plant and have it, you know, grow and make the same kale the next year. But what happens is that if you save seed from, you know, 20 plants, and then you use that seed generation after generation and continually save seeds from it, the genetics get bottlenecked and you'll get weakness, just like what happens in, you know, human or animal populations when things get inbred. Yeah. yes, the subsequent generations become weaker. Mm-hmm. So generally with things that are outbreeders, you want to have more plants, and with things that are inbreeders, you want to have, it doesn't matter as much. So things like peas are inbreeders. You can save seed off a little patch of peas, and that's fine, and that's mm-hmm. fine to save into the next generation. Beans as well. Mm-hmm. Carol Deppe's book, Breed Your Own Vegetable Varieties, is a really good resource for that type of information. And you really just have to go out and learn about what you're growing and mm-hmm. and find out about how it's pollinated and whether it's an inbreeder or an outbreeder in order to save seeds successfully.
Mm-hmm. And so with my spinach this year, I did the Bloomsdale mm-hmm. longstanding. And so would I be able to save seeds then next year from that plant, those plants again and again? Would it be like the peas, or would they be?
Spinach or outbreeders. So you can save your seeds and grow them and they'll be fine, but maybe next year get some fresh spinach and plant a bigger patch. And the great mm-hmm. thing is you'll get a lot of seeds, way more than you need for one mm-hmm. or 2 years, and you mm-hmm. can keep planting those seeds for many, many years, mm-hmm. and they will be viable for a long time if stored properly.
On the seed packets that you buy, usually it gives you a date, maybe mm-hmm. 1, 2 years, 3 years. Mm-hmm. But you're saying that you think if they're stored properly, you could go longer than that?
Definitely. All seed companies sell the same lot of seeds year after year after year. And they're packed for different years to let people know. Yeah, they're packed for different years, but most seeds can last for a very long time, up to 10 or 15 years even. Mm-hmm. And the proper way to store them is basically in a root cellar type environment. You want them to be ground temperature, consistent temperature, and dry. You want them completely dry. And a good way to test that with bean or pea seeds, you can, put it on the ground and hit it with a hammer, and if it shatters, mm-hmm. then it's really dry. But if it squishes or is bendy, then it's not dry enough.
You mentioned that you would keep, if you did pull up the plants, that you would keep them on the plants. But mm-hmm. Say you've harvested them out of the garden, and they're not on the plants. So maybe beans, you would shell those and lay them on, how would you make sure that they were really dry? You leave those in the garden, right? The beans?
Yes. To dry. I leave everything in the garden to dry as completely uh-huh. as it can. But every once in a while, like when I have broccoli seed, the birds will really want to get at it. Yeah. So I will often pull it a little bit early. I will pull it up by the roots. I'll leave it on the plant, and I just lay it all out on a tarp in the sun.
On a tarp.
And wait till it's fully dry, uh-huh. and then I will thresh it by usually just walking uh-huh. on the seeds, making sure, of course, that you cut off the roots first, because you don't want dirt mixing in with your seeds, because that can be really hard to mm-hmm. clean out.
Mm-hmm. What about pumpkin and squashes that, you're cutting them open, mm-hmm. or cucumbers? The other day I was canning, making dill pickles, mm-hmm. and when I cut through, I scrape some of those seeds off. How would you make sure those are all dry? Would you? Now I have put squash seeds on paper towels, but then they've stuck to the paper towel, so that's been a disaster.
Well, the way I clean squash seeds is I cut open the squash in the wintertime. Usually, hopefully, I get to just do it right when I'm ready to eat the squash. So you want to cut open the squash, and I take the seeds out and separate them from their gunk, and then I actually have a food dehydrator that I can mm-hmm. set at a very low temperature. And so what I do is I take the seeds out, I rinse them, separate them from their gunk, and put them in the food dehydrator on a low setting, and then they get completely dry. And when they're very dry, they have these translucent skins on the outside, and those skins will start to flake off and mm-hmm. fly away. Mm-hmm. And that's when you know that they're dry enough.
Mm-hmm. And then for storing, what kind of, would it be okay to put them in a glass jar?
Yes.
And seal the lid on
yes.
it?
Yes.
As long as they're really,
as long
really
as they're
dry.
Really dry. And you can do the shatter test with those uh-huh. winter squash seeds as well.
Mm-hmm. Where do you put the glass jar? Because I've heard that light is not supposed to get to them.
That's true. I have this wonderful room that is down in the basement and, you know, tucked back, you know, into the ground, and it just stays this really nice, you know, 50 degree ground temperature, and that's perfect. And dark is important.
Would a garage be too cold in the winter if it's not insulated, or
you know, it's not ideal, but just do the best you can.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things will be, I wouldn't expect something to go bad in 1 year, or even two. But yeah, the closer you can get to root cellar condition, the better, but do the best you can with what you have.
We have a lot of styrofoam boxes because of our fish. And if I stored them in that on the cement shop, if I stored them on the shop floor, which is cement, do you think that they'd stay probably around 50? Because it's styrofoam, you know, and these big styrofoam containers.
That might work.
I'll try it and put a thermometer in there and see what happens and let you know.
Okay.
Jeannie Flynn has snuck in the studio here and is and now participating with this, and so it's so great to see you this
week. I was called to deliver fish and totally forgot about this.
Oh, dear. So, do you have, you know, we just have a few more minutes, and I forgot during this whole process of opening the lines for callers, but we can do that now. We can stay a little bit longer if we get a call. The number is 468-3656, and if you have any questions or comments for Anna, that would be great. But before we close, do you have any special tips that you've learned from your seed collecting that you'd like to pass along to listeners?
I think the best advice I can give to people that want to save seeds is know as much as you can about what you're growing. Know the name, know the genus and species, know how it's pollinated, know how many plants you need in order to save seed. It's great to save seed as an afterthought, but it's also I think you can get better results if you plan for it, you know, while you're planting it, because you're going to plant a little differently when you save seed.
A gardening journal would be great for that, to make sure that you've got the, you know, all your information and your planting dates and how long it took it to start developing seeds.
Yeah, you get some pretty strange things if you plant the same family together.
Yes, or the same species together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is weird, but can be fun too, so.
Yeah.
Do it if it's fun.
And you also have your seeds at Sunset Villages, too.
Yeah, I have them at Sunset and at Blossom. And I'm also actually, I'm going to be at Farmer's Market on Saturday, and I'm having a sale on all the seeds that are packed for 2011. So that's a great time to come get seeds at a reduced price.
And do you have seeds on the mainland, too? I mean,
I have them in the co-op in Bellingham, and I have them in a couple places on San Juan and one place on Orcas and at the general store and shop.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Cool.
Great. Right.
That's really good.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, Anna, it's so great to have you be our guest today.
Yeah, I wish I hadn't missed the whole thing.
Well, now you'll have to listen to it next Wednesday.
Yes,
and
I remember to turn on the radio.
So it's time for us to close our show today. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we hope you enjoyed listening. We're looking forward to, each month to bringing you relevant gardening information and providing knowledgeable guests on the topics of discussion. So again, we thank you, Anna, for being our guest today.
Thanks
and all the wonderful information that you presented. If you'd like to hear about a specific topic or recommend a particular garden or guest, you can send an email to Anne@kloi.com. Thanks again for listening, and the show will be repeated each month. Each Wednesday this month at noon, and we'll be back with a new live show on Wednesday, October 12th at noon.
By rule, I'm gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a and picking stones. We are made of dreams and bones. I feel the need to grow my own. Cause the time is close at hand.
Time is close at hand.
Rain for grain, sun and rain. I find my way in nature's chain. I tune my body and my brain to the music of the land.
Okay.